Trish and Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
We're recording, and if you guys are ready, we'll go ahead and start.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Rob McGregor and
Trish McGregor
and our producer and tech magician, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com where we make regular blog posts and where you can find out about our books. Among them are Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, Sensing the Future, the Secrets of Spirit Communication, and Aliens in the Backyard, among others. Our latest book is called Mind-Blowing Synchronicities, the Latest Science Stories and Research. Trish's latest novel, Silent Thunder. Rob's most recent novel is called Tulpas, Story of Mysterious Beings Created Through Deep Meditation. If you are watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate it if you would take a second or two and to click the like, subscribe, and notification button so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there.
Our guest today is Sarah Akram, who says that most people experience fear and stress around money, and they're not aware of how much it's influencing their business, financial, and family life, and their impact in the world. Sarah is a leading money consciousness coach who has transformed the lives of over 20,000 business owners and their families. She offers a practical, relaxed approach to transforming your relationship with money based on her book, Love Money, Money Loves You. Her courses enable business owners, leaders, and investors to combine true wealth with true well-being. Welcome, Sarah. We've been looking forward to this.
Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, your book, in chapter 4, The Blueprint, I found fascinating. Can you explain that to us?
Straight in. Well, I should give a little context, because if somebody hasn't read the book, it doesn't make much sense why I would be writing a new blueprint for making money. Because it wasn't really me who came up with this blueprint. What actually happened was that I found myself writing messages from money. Turned out to be the energy of money was kind of talking to me through my pen and through my journaling, and showing me a whole new perspective on what money really is. And I was writing these little messages each day. On the fourth day of writing, it came out, I'm going to give you a new blueprint for making money. And probably the most controversial step of this blueprint is the very first one, which is to forget everything you think you know about money. It's like, oh, so what am I supposed to do then? Which is where most people go to. It actually turns out to be really good advice. And perhaps the thing that we could liken it to is beginner's mind, which is something that people are often familiar with. Because of the way we are used to thinking about money, and a lot of that's quite unconscious. We've learned things from our parents and religions and culture and the media. A lot of what we think we know about money isn't terribly accurate, and it's also not terribly effective. And so to actually take yourself into that beginner's mind, or just say, okay, whatever I'm about to do that relates to money, I'm always going to just let go of all the stuff that I think that I know. And what I find that does is it takes me, first of all, into relationship with money. It's like it's an energy that I relate to. It takes me back to first principles of money, which is about value and exchanging value with somebody else. And if we forget about value, we actually really forget what money's all about. And it enables me in any situation, because of what I learned from writing all these messages, which is what became the book, Love Money, Money Loves You, it brings me in touch with this very beautiful energy, actually. The energy of money is a beautiful energy that serves human beings. And yes, people do bad things with it, but that's, you know, that's because of them. It's not because of it. Mm-hmm. But it actually enables us to share value with each other, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, so you're coming from the perspective that money is has consciousness, and that you connected with that consciousness, and that provided you these messages, and that's how you got your information for the book. Is that your
evidence? Essentially. I mean, I would say money is part of consciousness, and there's a kind of system there that actually directly interacts with us as human beings, which is full of smaller consciousnesses, let's say, or beings, however you want to put it. Yeah, it's not just a fluffy cloud. It really, yeah. There's something very real in that energy.
I don't think I've ever read a book about money where money is speaking. I love that. Yeah. I mean, it's so different.
Yeah.
So the consciousness of money, or what is providing you these messages, doesn't really relate much to paper and coins, right? They don't think of that as being them.
Well, you know, they would see that that's an extension of them. So that the energy of money that we don't see that sits behind our money systems really creates all the movement of money, and also creates the synchronicities. You know, you ask for something and you receive it. All of that kind of stuff happens in that energy. Coins and notes and transactions are a way that we've created a not terribly accurate, but, you know, something of a representation of that energy. So we make it tangible here. And we see, you know, the money systems are changing. They're much more digital these days. That's coming closer, perhaps. It's another kind of representation of how this energy works that enables us to share value with each other.
How does these principles of money apply to somebody like Elon Musk? That may be a loaded question, but I'm just kind of curious.
You know, at one level, anybody who goes and creates a very significantly sized business, whether you agree with what they're doing or not, which might be the loaded piece, people will have very different opinions. But he has, first of all, solved a whole lot of problems that people didn't know how to solve. So there's a contribution in that, which business people do. They solve problems. And they solve problems for us. And then the other thing is that he has used a phenomenal capacity to organize people to solve those problems for a lot of people. So if people want, you know, very cool electric vehicles, he's got one of those for you. And if you think of the number of people, just think of it in terms of how many people just have their salaries paid because of the contribution that he makes. If you only take that bit, you realize that anyone who organizes a business, any kind of business, is making an enormous contribution to a lot of other people. Because all those people, all those families, you know, where somebody works in his business, they have money then to live on. That money then flows to all the other businesses that they interact with, the supermarkets and the shops and the school uniform shops or whatever, which means all of those people also have access to money. So people like Elon stimulate the flow of money through the economy.
But then he comes into our government and tries to, dismantles a lot of monetary systems that go to people.
And yes,
I mean, the part that's confusing.
Yes, look, we don't, it's probably not helpful to get into a kind of political discussion, but yeah. My understanding of what he did was that he saw, because he thinks like a business person. Mm-hmm. And if you think like a business person, you really don't like waste. And he saw, like, the stunning things that he did find, and it's a good thing to find. You know, if your social security systems are being paid to dead people, that means people who really need social security are missing out. So at that level, I think he just was horrified, as people are with governments all over the world, at the level of waste that exists in bureaucracies. And it's absolutely right to clean that out every now and then. You know, there's an argument as to whether a business mentality is right for government, because government has to also, to some level, take care of people, especially people who struggle to take care of themselves. Businesses don't have to do that. Businesses can, especially businesses like he runs, will be all about efficiency. I mean, there's innovation and efficiency, I would say, very important for him. If I would run a business, I would be more interested in taking care of people because I'm a different type of business owner. Mm. But I am also not an Elon Musk. And, you know, I think I think we have to be able to see the multiple layers of this, see the qualities and see the things that, you know, I would do differently.
Yeah. Let's go back to just the everyday person, regular people, and not Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Why does money cause so much stress and worry in people's lives?
Largely, most people in probably all over the world really have grown up with religious and spiritual knowledge or stories that make it look actually really wrong or evil to want money, to desire money, to have money. You know, that's very strong in Christianity. There's a very strong poverty consciousness that comes with Christianity a lot of the time, although the church itself is very rich. So, you know, there are some interesting contradictions in there. If you look at the East, you've got monks with begging bowls. They're the pillar of virtue. So I think there's a real tension inside most of us around being a good person or doing something purposeful and making money. And if you do something purposeful, a lot of people are terrified that money will corrupt them. People who make lots of money often feel that they've sacrificed their purpose and their values in doing it. I think most of that comes from spirituality and religious teachings.
And that may be one of the most misquoted quotes ever, is that money is the root of all evil. It's not money that's the root of all evil. It's the love of money that's there is a difference there. But anyway.
Yes, I understand that. You know, my book's called Love Money, Money Loves You. So I think it's not the...
I'm sorry. Money. Yeah, I wasn't taking a shot at the book. But
yeah. Okay, I don't mind. These are...
They're
very valid points.
That is something that's misquoted from scripture very often.
Yeah,
but I think it's just really important to understand that it's... You know, that quote as well. I can't remember. It's a bit of a while. So I can't remember exactly where it comes from. But there's a difference between kind of being obsessed with money or needing money to fill a hole in your soul, or actually loving money as an energy of abundance that your soul really relishes and delights in.
Yeah. What I think John was talking about was greed, you know.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah.
Yeah. Not love.
Yeah.
I think I have a cat who agrees with you. It just came up to me and tapped me on the arm.
Says, listen.
Yes.
And for what it's worth, it's 1 Timothy 6:10. But anyway, we can move on. Yep.
Yeah.
It's good, John. Just look it up.
Google is handy when you've talked yourself into a corner. Yeah, so.
Okay.
What are some of the surprising things you learned in writing this book?
The first thing I learned, which was really surprising, I knew that money was an energy, but it never occurred to me that it's a beautiful energy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about it as being a neutral energy, but it really came across to me as being a exquisitely beautiful energy. And that, I think, is genuinely surprising. Then it was really clear that relaxation, it says you all need to relax about money. And it showed that we've vastly misunderstood what money is, which is why we're so tense about it. The other message that comes through the book time and time again is about enjoyment. That enjoyment helps. So enjoying life, not necessarily even about enjoying money, but enjoying life helps money to flow. These are very, very simple adjustments. Most people are stressed and worried all the time about money. And it's saying, you know, relax and enjoy, because it actually flows better that way. Huh. There were a lot of surprising things, but those are a few very obvious ones.
So you've never channeled before this book?
I'd played around a little bit with a friend. We were running a business that was in a lot of difficulty after the recession that hit in 2008. And I found myself experimenting a little bit with asking angels to help us. And so every night at 10 o'clock, we'd sit down together and she would ask questions and I would answer as angels and she would write notes. So that's probably where I learned it, because it happened about 6 months after that.
Made you decide to write a book about money? How did the what was the initial, was there some initial thought or some idea that reason you had for pursuing it?
No, not at all. I had no intention of writing a book. Even when I was writing, I didn't know I was writing a book. I was given a little book. I just experienced that business failed in the end. We went out of business. And just after that, I was given a book. And one of the questions in the book was, what would money like to say to you? And it really, I just had the experience that my pen started writing this message. And the first thing it said was, I would like to tell you to love me.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then it went on and said, I'm energy. I'm very powerful and beautiful. And it kind of said, do whatever you want with me. Just stop being so rigid about money. I'm always here to help you. Like, don't be afraid. And so it was an extraordinary message. And that's how it started, completely by just happening.
What was the business that you had?
It was, well, when I started it, it was called the Energy Bank. It was about 8,500 square feet in the middle of the city of London, where all the bankers and financiers are, funnily enough, though I never thought of it that way. And we used to supply them with energy, with life energy. So we used to teach them how to relax and receive energy. Yeah, so it was very interesting that out of that came this book about money in the financial center of London, although it was years until I made the connection.
That's interesting. Cool.
So there's a mass consciousness about money right now that exists, and it's politically related too. And the word is affordability. A lot of people think everything's too expensive, we can't afford it. This is, you know, something that people talk about, but and the other side of the coin is abundance. And I just experienced that today when I went to this huge supermarket in our neighborhood. And I saw all these people working there, all these people shopping, and all this food, so much of it. And I think, wow, we really live in a world of abundance. Look at everybody here, you know, and all this food, you know. And there's, of course, places in the world that are not like that, you know. We've been to Cuba and seeing, yes, you know, the other side of it. But what about the question of affordability? This is a mindset. The reality is, you know, prices keep going up and maybe more than wages. So just from an economic point of view, that's an issue. But what does money think about that?
That's a loaded.
Well, I think it's some of those things where there are multiple, there are multiple perspectives. Like at one level, yes, it's true that prices keep going up, and they're going up for reasons that I think feel very out of control for people. Some of the reason they're going up is actually is because there's so much debt in the economy. And so my understanding is that 50% of everything you pay for is actually just paying for debt that you never took out. Mm-hmm. And I think it feels really, for a lot of people, just feel like there's something wrong, but I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And an economy that is so reliant on debt, like if this is a private human being and they get deeply into debt, they've got huge credit card debt and they can't pay it back. Mm-hmm. The banks draw a line. They say you can't go on like that. But mm-hmm. countries keep on going on like that. So I think mm-hmm. people feel that there's something wrong. And there's a truth in that. Like the economy itself is not supportive to people. At the same time, it can very easily turn you into a victim. And once you get into that kind of victim mentality, like, oh, I've got no way out, this is impossible for me, you cut off from this energy of money. So even when things are happening, there's a way in which we need to stay really awake and alive and find a solution rather than become the victim of the situation. And that's how we create change in the long run.
It'd be great if everybody in the world read your book, including all of these economists who talk about, you know, oh, everything's too high. Okay, guys, what you do, you talk to Sarah and you read her book.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
You tell them.
Interesting to have an economist on with you, that would be an interesting discussion.
That would be.
And disembodied voice of John here, I'm almost scared to say anything else because
but I do believe that that is a huge problem. Late 20th century, end of the 21st century is just the multinational banks and just the fact that we raise as soon as you know, certainly in the Western world, as soon as you have a driver's license, you're getting applications for credit cards just to get you into that grind where you're just continuously trying to dig your way out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I think that, well, I can see very clearly, and any of us can see if we look at it carefully, that our economy makes a lot of money out of human suffering. There's a story that often gets told by enlightened economists that if there's a disaster, let's say there's an oil spill, actually the economy is boosted by that because a lot of work is created. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be like that. There should be a kind of, hold on a moment, we lost something, we polluted the ocean, and all that work, yes, it was necessary. But actually, so disease, war, we know that, we hear that often about war. These are all stimulants to the economy. They make our GDP stronger. So there's something really upside down about the way we think about money, where we use money in a way to hurt people. And that's one of the things that I'm really passionate about, is how do we shift our economy so that it's actually supporting the well-being of people and the well-being of nature as well, because we're part of nature and we rely on it. And if we destroy it to make ourselves rich, we make ourselves the ultimate poverty, you know? Well, so I think our economy's got very out of balance and it needs to shift in a better direction. And I know a lot of people who are working on that.
Well, and I promise I'll mute after this, there's no patience, I think this started with the MTV generation, is that need it now, you know, there's no patience, and that's what drags, I think, a lot of people into this, in particular, credit card debt, it certainly in the U.S., and then you're running from behind, you know, for a long time. Because, you know, a teenager, minimum wage, and but you're getting all the things you want on a credit card. Yeah. You're going into debt to, you know, the whole keeping up with the Joneses or whatever you want to call it. But it is this, need it now, not. Yeah,
and the banks and corporations encourage that to spend the money, you know, to get in debt because they can, you know, have the interest and raise the interest.
Sure, I think there's something quite interesting here actually, because my book talks about debt, and it just shows you that when you borrow, you're always borrowing from somebody else's energy. Essentially, like somebody else has created that credit for you to borrow from, and that we really need to be very mindful of that and be very, very sure we can pay off any debt before we take it on, which of course is not encouraged by the banks very much. There has been a time of very irresponsible lending around that. The other thing, though, this, you know, want it now. If you really want it now, then I would say learn to manifest. I think, you know, there's a truth that sometimes we can get things very quickly, but we have to do that using the laws of nature and life, not the laws of banking that didn't quite understand that nature and life bit.
But we have a government. I mean, in the U.S., certainly we have a government. What? How many trillions of dollars in debt are we at this point? Yeah,
I mean, all over the world. Yeah. The whole world is running on debt, and debt is. It's not. It doesn't make for a healthy economy. In a household, we know that nobody likes being in debt. But I think we just have to be really simple and straightforward about it. Debt's useful from time to time, but nobody wants to be in debt. So let's not build an economy around debt. And, let's use it.
And money tells you that there's plenty of it itself, right? There's an abundance of it.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, how much limit is there to human creativity? Very little. You know, human creativity is within the frame of our life. It's unlimited. And human creativity is a, you know, you make a, if you're creative, you make a contribution to other people, and money is the energy that flows to kind of enable us to exchange those contributions. There is really no limit to that.
Yeah. Sarah, your book should be required reading for all governments.
And I think that is where we get confused sometimes, because there's always more money. The actual currency is there's only so much time. It's time versus money. So, yeah.
Well, what do you think of crypto? I mean, that's just not even based on anything for the most part.
Well, it depends. I'm in the process of creating a crypto token that is backed by ecological improvements. So, you know, people taking care of nature. So it's crypto sometimes is backed by stuff, sometimes it isn't. Yeah. I think the interesting thing about crypto is the decentralization of money, that it's actually not entirely controlled now by private banks who control most of the money and governments who control the other bit. It's put something which is a very fundamental energy in the hands of people. What people do with it, like with all money things, you know, people do good things and bad things with it. But I think it's a very interesting development, especially where it's decentralized. Centralizing it probably means more of the same.
Did money speak to you about this? About this crypto?
It didn't speak about crypto as such, but the increasingly kind of ephemeral nature of money, which is really digitization makes money so that, you know, you never touch anything. Right. That's definitely in the book. All the blueprints for good use of money and good financial design, you don't notice them at first, but because I've been working with the book now for 12, 13 years, it's like, oh, it's all in there. It just reveals itself little by little by little.
So you first wrote this book in 2011, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but, okay, how did it change from 2011?
It's really, probably really what happened is that I changed. And because it's a book that's really written by the energy of money, it's a very powerful energy. So it's there's a powerful transmission in the book. So every time you read it, you get something different from it at quite a strong level. And it starts to reveal things because of the transmission of energy. And for me, you know, I changed from being somebody who had, if I turn it into pounds, probably about $220 a month. I had accommodation and we grew our own food and we had about $220 a month. And so I had to literally start with learning I moved to Australia. I didn't know anyone here. I started a business. I had to be paying all my bills within a few weeks. And I really needed the book then. So it taught me from nothing how to grow the business on new principles, how to combine money with well-being. And now I'm learning how to create new business models that, that can be shared much more widely. No, I'm in Australia.
No, but I mean, before you moved to Australia.
I was in New Zealand before that.
Oh, okay, New Zealand. See, I knew there was a New Zealand connection somewhere.
Yeah, I spent 13 years in New Zealand.
Okay. Okay, what about the fear factor? Money and fear seem to go together for a lot of people at some points in their
life. Yes. I think that's one of the reasons why money says very early on in the book, you need to relax about money. Because the thing about fear, as probably everyone knows really, is it pushes, it makes you defended. And when you're defended, you don't let anything in. Mm-hmm. So if you're afraid of money, you really say, I don't want to let you near me. We don't want things near us that we're afraid of. Mm-hmm. So I personally think it's really important to learn more about money, to understand what money really is, so that you're not afraid of it, because then you can make decisions. You don't have to be a billionaire if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. Most people don't want to be. Most people don't want that much responsibility. There's a huge amount of work and responsibility that goes into looking after money and doing stuff with it. Mm-hmm. But you might want to, there may be things that you do want that you don't have at the moment. And once you're not afraid of it, you can make your own decisions. It's like it puts your life into your hands.
Yeah. So you're saying that for money can be a burden then if you have too much of it.
They say that once you get over about 200 to 250,000 a year, it becomes more and more. So there's a sweet spot there, up to probably between about 100 and 250 is good for most people. Once you get over that, it begins to become a much bigger pressure again.
But that produces a job, because then you hire somebody to manage.
Well, that's true.
Your money,
but you know what? Hiring people. It's good for the economy, and it's a good, you know, it's a good contribution. There's definitely much more pressure the minute you start hiring people.
Well, and you're hoping you're hiring the right person, right?
So. Well, you've got that, and you know, I work with lots of business owners, and you know, they've got to do payroll every month, and it's an enormous pressure to make sure you're always earning enough money to pay other people their whole salaries, keep their families basically financially secure. All the time, even in a small, well, especially in a small business, you know, but big businesses as well, there's a real pressure around taking that level of responsibility with money.
Hmm. But since you wrote the book, has the way money's spoken to you changed? Or has it gotten larger?
I think that, you know, it's a very simple, beautiful energy. Uh-huh. So it doesn't so much change. It's like this very stable presence that what I'm able to receive and what I'm able to work with, that's definitely changed. Uh-huh. So, and the scope and the scale of what I'm doing, you know, because I was really on survival level when I started. So that was, you know, for me at that time, it was, how do I pay my rent this week? I don't have enough clients. Now I'm not thinking about that. This morning I was in the conversation about how do we direct the flows of money in a business to make sure that it works for everyone in the community of that business. It's a very different level of conversation I'm having now.
Sounds like a much more positive.
of course, much more creative.
Yeah.
Because it's now like, okay, how do we create businesses that are good for well-being, that solve the problems that business can create at the moment, where, you know, it can destroy nature or destroy people's well-being. How do we do it differently? So now I'm in a much more creative stage.
So that's for cool. People who have an extensive amount of money, way more than they could spend in, you know, 1,000 lives, let's say, their whole life becomes about giving, it should be about giving. You know, I mean, what is the role of giving the point I'm getting to, they're not the only ones who can give. Anybody can give. And isn't it true that if you're giving, then your receiving will balance that out?
Not necessarily. I mean, I know people who believed that and gave, or maybe they had some money, one person who inherited some money. And I think sometimes people do it also out of guilt, feeling some guilt about having more than other people. And she gave, and just ended up having less and less for herself and feeling more and more strained. So it's not an equation that the more you give, the more you receive. Okay. There is no question that if you're able to receive generously, you're able to give generously.
Right.
If you want to give generously, you need to receive generously. You can't give what if you don't have.
Yeah.
So if you want to be able to give a lot, you've got to bring in a lot. But the other thing is that giving isn't the only thing. One of the most powerful things people can do is invest. Because when you invest money, let's say you invest in another business, you enable another whole lot of people to create something new, solve some problems, feed some families. So investing, especially if you can invest in alignment with your values, which is difficult for most of us. But investing is a very powerful thing to do. And of course, that creates a return that means you can do more of it. Mm-hmm. So I think investing, you know, wise investing is a very generous act, actually.
I'd like to ask a question about people who win lotteries and make, you know, say they make $3 million or $5 million, and 3 years later, it's gone.
They spent it.
Yeah, they spent it or gave it away. Is that because they don't know how to handle money, or they don't have
You should be asking how they want it to begin with. Maybe that's about receiving.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, they definitely, you know, it's real. They received it. I mean, it's certainly not the only story. I was listening to a story just the other day of a couple who won the lottery in Britain. And it's obvious, I don't know how it is in other places, but in Britain, they have very, very good support around lottery winners. And they'd done one amazing things with it. They'd given a lot and continue to do so. They'd obviously been given very good advice about how to take care of the money. It had enabled them to, you know, for their kids to get a good education. But they're still, years later, wealthy people who continue to do good things with their money. It was a beautiful story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a more interesting story. I mean, for sure, there was research that showed these people who lost everything. And I can understand that if their consciousness didn't really grow with the money and nobody helps them to be responsible about it, they might not know anything different. But it isn't the only story. And really, what's interesting is, what does money make possible for people? And this woman was so, it was so beautiful listening to her, actually, because it was a complete surprise. And yet it had made such an enhancement to her life and to many other people's lives.
Since this book came out almost 15 years ago, what kind of stories have you heard about from people who have read your book and applied the concepts?
There are so many stories. It's often hard to pick one. But funnily enough, I was reading a book review just the other day that I'd never seen before, of a guy who had been stuck in relation to finding work for some years, I think. And he read the book. And I didn't even get the impression it's the kind of book he would normally read. Mm-hmm. And while he was reading it, he got himself a $100,000 a year job that he really loved. And he knew it was because he changed his attitude towards money. So I often hear stories of people. There was a couple who read the book just recently. They were getting really behind on their mortgage. And while she read the book six times, and they caught up with their mortgage. So those kinds of things are meaningful.
They should buy the book six times.
They usually go and talk to all their friends about it, which is even better.
That's even better.
Well, and I wanted to say earlier is that I think a really great analogy that I've certainly used a lot. If you've ever traveled anywhere on an airplane, when you get the safety brief, what they tell you is get your mask on when the mask drops from the ceiling, put your mask on so then you can help the next person. And I think that's something that with lotto winners and stuff, I think that's something that just completely goes out the window, is that, okay, I'm going to help everybody. No, you got to secure yourself first, and then you can help other folks, right? Yeah. I think.
Yeah, they probably help everybody because I think they become very generous very quickly.
Sure. Yeah.
And probably don't take care of their own long-term future. Yeah. I mean, clearly, I know in Britain it was very obvious that there's a huge amount of support to make sure that they make good decisions, because it's not good for the lottery either if people get destroyed by it.
Right.
That's also.
But make sure you're secure so then you can help more people, right? I think that.
Well, of course, and anyone who has a family understands that. Like, you have to take care of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to take care of your family and you have a surplus, you know, it's natural to help other people, but people will take care of their kids first as much as they can. That's the natural thing to do.
I think that is something that is, so yeah, it should bubble up. So take care of yourself, take care of your family, take care of your community. And then and the pets are part of the family.
Your dogs.
But once you get to that point, then you can start thinking about taking care of other folks, right?
But the interesting thing is, you can only really take care of yourself by taking care of other people, because you take care of yourself by getting a job or starting a business. Mm-hmm. That means you're automatically doing things for other people. So that's why money is a beautiful energy, because it actually makes us generous fundamentally. And we might not realize that. We might not get the message, but that's it fundamentally forces people to serve others in order to take care of themselves. And when they do that, they can then serve more. So it creates this circulation.
So what you're doing, in a sense, is blending money with spirituality in a good way.
In a positive way.
Yeah, as opposed to the idea that money is God, which is...
Or that money is evil.
Yeah. I think more of a standard religious in religion that might be a theme that's people believe. But I like the idea that you're talking about energy and showing how people can make money and put it to good use. But what about responsibility when, say, you want a new car and you see one for $25,000 that you can afford, but there's one for $60,000 you really like. But you might think, well, I'm not being responsible if I buy that car. But in your book, you say there's a way of dealing with that question if you really, really want that car or whatever. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, if you really do want something, it's quite remarkable. And there are many examples of this that we hear all the time. It's quite remarkable how that can happen. I actually have a couple of photos of people who've sent me cars that they bought. kind of neat examples, very proud of them. We don't focus a lot in our community that most people are not particularly materially driven. But still, one woman wanted this beautiful four-wheel drive car. She could go with her husband. They could go camping and all of this stuff. And she was so happy when she got the one she actually wanted rather than the one. But she, again, it just comes to simple things like, because it's your decision. No one can tell you what you should do with your money. For me personally, I probably wouldn't go in debt to do that. To get the really expensive one. Because I've made a personal choice that I don't do things that way. I'm very aware that if I go into debt, I'm borrowing energy from someone else. My energy hasn't reached that level yet. So I'm quite careful about that. Other people are different. But I do think it's important that the energy of money loves it when we go for what we really want rather than just what we think we should want. So there's a kind of stimulation of the energy that happens. I have a little trick which I'll share. If there's something I really want and it's very specific, I'll say, I really want this or something better. And that, it kind of softens the energy. It makes me a little bit less focused on it's got to be this and only this. And the or something better sometimes happens and really is better. It might be better in a slightly different way than I hadn't thought about. So that's a really useful trick for people who do want something that feels a bit out of reach.
Like, what happened with you? What was it?
What do you mean?
Well, in other words, you said you wanted something that was out of reach.
I mean, I want things that are out of reach all the time. Everything I want is better than what I've got. I'm at a position in my life where most of the smaller things. I was saying to my husband the other day, a lot of things that are difficult, lots of people really have to think about buying. And I'm not talking about really expensive stuff, but a lot of stuff, if I want it, I can go and buy it now, which I couldn't some years ago. But then there are a whole lot of things that I want that I can't afford right now. I'm in that situation all the time. There's lots of things that I want, but they come. Bit by bit, they come because I keep making money and I keep working and I keep growing my business. It's like this beautiful incentive for me to contribute more and more and do it in a way that's good for me because I don't want to get all this stuff or whatever and be miserable and sick. So, I have to take care of all of it.
Yeah. I don't mean to bring up all the negative ideas about money, but there's a lot of criminality is related to money. people who want more money and will do things that are offensive to other people or just to businesses or to break the law to achieve more money and to and also doing it through government corruption. How does money deal with that question? If it money, as you're saying, is coming from a positive point of view and is not about money is not evil, but I guess maybe some people are evil or do evil acts. It's really at the heart of so much of our lives. And you're talking to money, and I'd like to know what they want to have to say.
Well, I think it's really easy. It's really important that we put the responsibility for doing evil things on the people who do it. It's not money who does that.
Right.
Yeah.
Because people do evil things with children. It's not the children who are responsible for that. Mm-hmm. Children are children. Children are beautiful.
Yeah.
People do evil things with nature. Nature is beautiful, and it's an incredible kind of system that we're living in that we all appreciate as human beings, but people do really evil things with it. It's the people, usually very hurt people or people who are very afraid in the core of themselves, who do very bad things with things that are very precious to us. What I came to recognize, which is very controversial in a way, but abundance is something like our souls really resonate with abundance. We love the feeling of abundance. That doesn't come from some heady desire, I want to be a millionaire. It's like, I want to experience abundance in my life. And we do, we're surrounded by, and like you said, there's an abundance in the supermarket. My husband grows food for us. And it doesn't matter how you organize it, there's always more than we need. Mm-hmm. It's just nature grows abundantly. Nature can also be very scarce in the winter in Europe and some places. Nothing's growing because it's covered with snow. So there are scarce times. We have all of this. But I feel like, first of all, we need to put the responsibility on people. I don't know whether you get rid of criminality. I think that, there's always seems to be always a subculture that arises in any culture of criminality. It's definitely a very good incentive to other people to be good. I think it serves its purpose at a deep spiritual level, really. So I'm not sure that we'll ever just eliminate it. It probably become more sophisticated.
Real quick, can I interject?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, but and I said I was going to shut up about 15 minutes ago. But I think that's a good point, because what abundance allows is pursuit of other things, like art, and that opens us up to the possibilities of things.
We don't want a whole world living in survival. Abundance enables creativity and generosity.
You put it way better than I did. Thank you.
Yeah. And the well-being also.
Well-being.
Yeah. And so you can have wealth and well-being at the same time.
100%. Right. In fact, wealth without well-being is not really wealth. I mean, how good do you feel if you have lots of money and you're feeling terrible? There's no wealth in that. And well-being without any money, just, not having enough to feed your kids or whatever, that's not really well-being. So they're very connected with each other.
Right.
What did your husband grow? I'm curious.
Oh, we're growing. We've got lettuces and sweet corn, and we've got different kinds of spinach and rocket and cucumbers and all kinds of things at the moment. Yeah. And we only moved into this house like 7 weeks ago. After 5 or 6 weeks, we started eating our own vegetables, which was amazing. And that really is an experience of abundance. We have a power cut now. So fridge not working, freezer not working, 2 days now. I just go out to the garden and pick some salad, and we've got fresh food for every meal.
Yeah.
That's good.
So Trish and I have made a living like 40, 45 years just as writers, freelance writers. And in the last 6, 7 years, we've turned more and more to helping other people.
20 years.
Okay, yeah. through ghostwriting. And I really enjoyed doing it. Trish, not as much. But one of the things, though, that, you know, like Trish had an opportunity recently to make quite a bit of money, but she hated the idea of writing this particular book.
It was a horrible book. It's a horrible idea.
So she was going.
I'm with you, Trish. Totally with you. I don't like to do work, but
right.
No,
she was going to
align with my values.
Yeah,
she was
exactly.
She was going to have more wealth, but not well-being. So she chose well-being over having.
Sure. You know what? I will. With those situations, I'll always say there's a better one coming.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
right.
Typically
exactly
it works out like that.
That's exactly what she said, too.
Yeah. I mean, this thing was just a nightmare. I thought it would take me 2 or 3 years to write this, if I even could.
And then you would have nightmares about it.
Yeah,
and then it take
would.
Another 2 or 3 years to recover. It's like, yeah,
exactly.
That's better
than be dead by then.
In time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh, good. You've calmed Rob.
Yeah. Okay, so what last question, what is true wealth?
Very interesting question. So clearly well-being is a part of true wealth. We've just talked about that already.
Yeah.
When I looked at it, I started looking at currencies, and I saw that if you have the currency of money in abundance, but you never have any time, you don't really experience wealth. So I started looking at time as a currency. It's like, so if you have abundance with your time, that means you can use it creatively. It
right.
doesn't necessarily mean you're free all the time, but you really, you're not pressurized all the time with so much you've got to get done. And you have money. That's wonderful. But what if you have terrible relationships? That's not wealth. So I started to see relationships as a currency of true wealth. And I could picture people, they've got money, they've got time, they've got good relationships all around them, but they have no wisdom. And they end up wondering, why have I done all of this? What was the purpose of it? I've made money and, you know, I've lived a good life, but it just feels empty. So I realized that wisdom is also a kind of currency of true wealth, with well-being being the foundation. When we have those currencies, all of them, we experience wealth. Now, alongside that, you need your own personal currencies, maybe your own skills and experience. That's individual for each person. But that's how I came to, I work with those four currencies, money, time, relationships, and wisdom, with well-being being the foundation of wealth.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
That's my true wealth.
Yeah.
I think I've said it on this podcast before, is that wisdom is a word that is not used enough these days.
So. I agree with you. Wisdom is what we need more of in the world.
Yeah, there's not enough of it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Wow, this has been great. Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it.
When's this going up, John?
Don't always ask that question.
It will be sometime between now and maybe the first week of January. I'm not sure at the moment.
Yeah. Well, share it with me, and I'll share it with my community.
Yeah, I'll share.
We'll let you know.
How can people get a hold of you if they want to take your classes or learn more about your work?
My website is my name, sarahmcrum.com.
Okay.
Right. And you have everything listed there, events.
Everything's on my website, and people can email me from there if they've got any questions. So, yeah.
Well, this is way. Great. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining The Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical.